was a little bit torn as to what I wanted to preach about this Sunday, because we have the continuing exposition of this great theology of the Eucharist as found in the sixth chapter of St. John. At the same time, maybe some of you are aware and some of you are unaware, but some of the stuff that we went through as an archdiocese, a lot of revelations of abuse in the church is happening in places like Pennsylvania and even many failings of people in the hierarchy, bishops, in the Northeast. And was just thinking about, well, should I just go some nice pie-in-the-sky spiritual message or look at the issues at hand? And I'm not going to go into real in-depth into some of the issues in our, in the media right now, just because people didn't sign up to hear that necessarily today, and there's a lot of families here. But if you'd like to have a more in-depth conversation about that this afternoon at 12:30, we're going to have a holy hour for reparation. And then following, anyone who wants to stay and have a frank conversation is welcome to do so. Father Nathan will be leading that. But I was thinking about, you know, they don't really teach you to preach about that in seminary. But nevertheless, we're faced with these realities that we have, and it's not just in the church. If you've been paying attention to the news over the past year or more, we hear about terrible evil in Olympic sports, in politics, in Hollywood. I was reading something about public schools in Chicago just recently, and I'd be willing to bet in every walk of life where people try to be good at something, the devil will come in and will corrupt it, and it will exist somewhere, somehow, in the midst of that. And so I was preparing this homily, the one thing that stuck out to me was evil. The idea and the truth and the reality of evil. And that despite the evil that is in the world, which hopefully is clear, we still have to continue on with our lives. I've seen pictures of people saying Mass after World War II in cathedrals that were bombed, and so a part of the sanctuary is destroyed and it's just rubble, and yet they pray on. And so even if we were sitting in a crater, and you know the altar was just some piece of rubble, we would still have to come, and we would still have to pray, and we would still have to worship God. And after all, our lives go on anyways. Terrible things can and will continue to go on in the world, and yet we still have to go to work and take care of your parents and drop your kids off and deal with even the own interior personal struggles. And perhaps it could be easy to get obsessed with stuff out there and lose track of ourselves and fall into despair. And the trap of evil is a slippery one, because the first steps are usually small and subtle. I mean, no one wants to become an evil person when they're a kid. You know, when you're growing up, you don't say, I want to be an evil man when I grow up. No one says that. And yet small decisions build up, and before we know it, we fall down, as you hear it say, like the slippery slope into even an evil way of existing. I think of, I was doing an outdoor school in Alaska after college, and we had to practice stopping ourselves with an axe if we fell down an ice slope. And you had to take the axe and kind of smash it into the ground and kick with your feet and really struggle to stop yourself, because when you get going, it's really challenging to pull yourself up and to pull yourself out of all of this. And our second reading today from St. Paul is a caution in a world that is seemingly evil. He says in this reading that the days are evil. And it could be easy to say, well, things are different back then. They didn't live in the situations that we do now. And so St. Paul's message to watch how you live and to take the moral law seriously is sort of outdated. And on the one hand, you could say, maybe it is. Because nowadays, there are a million ways to ruin your life. I mean, there was always ways of doing bad stuff, and I'm sure it was always easy to destroy your life. But nowadays, it's even easier. I mean, any one of us could step out this door in 5 minutes, have enough, drugs to end our lives. You can open up one website on your phone or your computer or everything which is in all of your pockets and ruin your marriages and lose your jobs and end up in prison. It is easy nowadays, easier perhaps than it ever has been, to destroy yourselves. You think of how much easier it is to destroy a house of cards than to build one up. But we would be mistaken if we thought that St. Paul in his own day and age was living in a world where everyone just thought all this stuff was just, you know, the good old days where people just did what they were supposed to do and everything. St. Paul is preaching a message of radical conversion in a culture that does not follow this stuff. He's preaching to Ephesus, which was a very pagan, occult town given to sort of the depths of, you know, like magic and worship of evil things. I was joking, it's sort of like Madison, Wisconsin, in a sense, you know. If Madison versus Milwaukee, every place has its issues, right? But it was not a place where the moral message was easily heard. And the people Paul is preaching to have converted to Christianity and yet still struggle. And they've converted to Christianity in a way that is different for many of us. You know, we hear people talking about the moral law and about evil, and you might think to yourselves, why are they talking about sin again? We've heard all this, you know, do this, do that. The church is always telling me what to do. It doesn't hit us. But when Paul was preaching this, no one in the society practiced these things he was preaching. You know, and he touches on just a few things in this reading. He talks about not falling into drunkenness and debauchery, which could be many things, right? It's not like people are like, oh, we all know that. No, the culture of his day and age was given to all of that. The fertility rites of the goddess worship was rife with all sorts of things I can't even talk about in the church here. And yet people heard it, and it was almost as like the first time they had heard that message of moral goodness and conversion. And the people who converted did so at the cost of probably their families, at the cost of losing their community because they broke away from another type of worship, and many of them, including Paul himself, at the cost of their life. And so it's not like Paul had it easy and was just speaking to people that had kind of already got it, and it's now outdated and outmoded. In a sense, the culture of Ephesus is probably a lot more like nowadays than ever before. And so we can't dismiss Paul and say that his people and his hearers had it easy. And he cautions these people, and I think we need to hear it too and say we need to take sin seriously. We need to take sin in our lives, in our world, seriously. You just think of how often we laugh about it. You know, I mean, I'm guilty of it probably just as much as anyone else here. You know, you see, you go to the movies and there's people are just stumbling around drunk and sleeping around and everything. And we, you know, are the TV shows that we watch, it's like all it's about nowadays. And we all watch it. We all soak it up. I mean, I just think, you know, I saw it when I was in college, movie The Hangover. Some of you probably seen that. That and many other things like it celebrates the destruction of people's lives. And we laugh about it. And we give our money to it. And we funnel it into our homes and our families. And Paul is saying to us and to me, just as to you, you need to stop that because it's destroying you and us and our church and our world and our culture. And just as an example of that, even last night I was laying in bed about 11:30 and I heard a fight, like a knockout, drag down screaming match outside the window of the rectory over at Holy Angels. I was like, wow. And it was really loud. It sounded like someone was about to, you know, really lose it, if you will. And so I was like, I'm going to get up. So I got up and I put on my priest outfit, you know, and I don't sleep in my clerics. And I put on and I go outside and they see me coming and they start trying to walk away. And I kind of walk towards them a little bit and they kind of walk faster. I'm like, well, they don't want to chat with me, but they moved on. And so I was like, I'll just walk around the block a little bit. I was up anyways. And then three other men came from through the parking lot and were stumbling around, just sort of, you know, totally inebriated and spilling stuff everywhere. And I guess I'll talk to these guys instead. And they're good, you know, good people probably. Maybe even, I don't know if they're here tonight, but good people. You never know. And so it's not to judge them and cast them, but this is like an example of the world we live in. And then, so I was chatting with them just sort of casually, and then from the corner came someone who was just married that day at Holy Angels. And I know who he is. He's a good guy. And he starts walking through the parking lot, and they all knew him too. They're like, "Oh, what are you doing here?" Oh. And they're kind of laughing and celebrating. It was sort of like something out of the Bible almost, you know, these strange meeting at night. And they look at the groom who had just been married, and they said, "Oh, why aren't you drinking?" And he just kind of brushed off, said, "I don't know. I just decided not to drink today." And they're laughing and giving him all sorts of trouble for not being totally inebriated on his wedding day. And I just thought, how typical is that of just every day of our lives, where we mock and ridicule people who strive to do the right thing, and how hard it is even to do the right thing in this day. And then I was just continued to talk with them. The groom walked on. I was chatting with the guys, and like, "Oh, why did you become a priest?" You know, then they're asking these questions, and I'm not giving them real long answers, but just basically said, "Oh, well, you know, I found Jesus, and he called me." And he's like, "Oh, I hear that all the time." And I was like, "Well, I wanted to ask him, and I didn't. But I wanted to ask him, well, which one of us here was happy enough with their lives, they didn't have to lose their mind with drink to deal with it tonight?" You know, people criticize the moral law, and they say it's so diminishing and it hurts our lives. It's like, well, you know, who in that parking lot was appreciative and loved life enough that they didn't have to forget about it? So the moral law, at first, and actually probably always to those who struggle with it, seems like a challenge. But when you enter into it, it's always life-giving. I think St. Paul is calling us to this. And he's calling the culture, the world, clearly the church, me, everyone, to kind of say, wake up. Stop fooling around. Paul says, time is short. Don't waste this opportunity. He's basically saying, like, you're not going to live forever, and you have this short time to choose God or not. What will you do? Pope Francis speaks about kind of the cosmic struggle that we're all in, and I'm going to quote a lengthy passage from him here. In a recent apostolic exhortation, or kind of like a letter, he's just saying, please do this thing. It's called Gaudete et Exultate. It just came out this year. He said, "We will not admit the existence of the devil if we insist on regarding life by empirical standards alone, without a supernatural understanding. It is precisely the conviction that this malign power is present in our midst that enables us to understand how evil can at times have so much destructive force. True enough, biblical authors had limited conceptual resources for expressing certain realities. Yet this should not lead us to an oversimplification that would conclude that all cases related in the gospel had to do with psychological disorders, and hence that the devil does not exist or is not at work. He is present in the first pages of Scripture, which end with God's victory over the devil. Indeed, in leaving us the Our Father, Jesus wanted us to conclude by asking the Father to deliver us from evil. That final word does not refer to evil in the abstract. A more exact translation would be the evil one. It indicates a personal being who assails us. Jesus taught us to ask daily for deliverance from him, lest his power prevail over us. Hence, we should not think of the devil as a myth or a representation, a symbol, a figure of speech, or an idea. This mistake would lead us to let down our guard, to grow careless, and to end up more vulnerable. The devil does not need to possess us. He poisons us with the venom of hatred, desolation, envy, and vice. And when we let down our guard, he takes advantage of it to destroy our lives, our families, and our communities. Like a roaring lion, he prowls around the world, looking for someone to devour." In short, the devil doesn't want to scare you. He just wants you to go to hell. St. Augustine speaks about this idea that probably now faces us, so we can think and contemplate, but yet we're sitting here in this church maybe striving to do the right thing. And he talks about this idea of hypocrisy, where you profess belief in God with your lips, but you don't do anything about it. He says, "What good does it do you to believe and to blaspheme? You love him in his head. You blaspheme him in his body. He loves his body. If you have cut yourself off from the body, the head has not cut himself off from his body. You honor me to no avail," cries out the head from on high. "It is as though someone wanted to kiss your head and to trample on your feet. Perhaps he would crush your feet with nailed boots while wanting to hold your head and kiss it." It's a call for each and every one of us. And I keep including myself in this. I don't want you to think I'm just standing up here saying, I am perfect and I don't have to do any of this. That evil is real and that it's a struggle and we need to take it seriously and pay attention. And if we relate it to our gospel, it's as though Jesus is saying, stop eating worthless food. Eat the true food. Love God. Love his law. It will give you life. If we don't, but we come here anyways, it's as though we are loving his head and trampling on his feet. If we do, though, if we do love him with our lives and convert our lives and seek forgiveness, then we can do what Jesus says in the end of his gospel here. He says, this is the bread that came down from heaven, unlike your ancestors who ate and still died. Whoever eats this bread will live forever.